Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, December 12, 2016.
No means
no.
No means
no.
Women have
right to know.
No means
no.
Leaders, advocates, and moms joined together at City Hall today to reaffirm the importance of the Right to Know Act. The Right to Know is a set of bills to protect citizens against police abuse. It's been waiting for passage by the New York City Council since 2012. Donna Lieberman of the NYCLU says the Right to Know is simple common sense.
It requires the police to get consent when they don't have the right to search somebody. Duh. It requires them to give out a business card and tell people who they are. Don't the leaders, the progressive leaders of our city, recognize that that is off the bat a way to de-escalate relationships between the police department and New Yorkers? Don't they understand that this is indeed a step toward rebuilding the trust and confidence that people between the police department and New Yorkers?
Why is it a problem to know who the officer is that stopped you?
Eljoy Williams is president of the NAACP. She says New York leaders like to brag in other states about being progressive leaders, but they haven't armed New Yorkers with information about who is policing them.
Why is it a problem to get their information? Should we not know who these individuals are who are stopping us? How would you know if you are not collecting this information, or if civilians are not able to collect this information? How do you know that an officer in your precinct is stopping people too many times that look a certain way or fit a certain profile if this information is not collected or given out? And what is the problem with New York City civilians knowing who the officers are who stop them? They hide behind this badge, they hide behind their uniform, they hide behind their gun in this blue wall. And all we're asking is, if you are going to stop me with no cause, I want to know who you are.
Joanne Smith is with Girls for Gender Equity. She says transgender women of color suffer additional gender-related harm while they are in custody.
Like being isolated or subjected to increased sexual violence, harassment and abuse at the hands of prisoners and corrections facility staff. It's our moral obligation to prevent these arrests by minimizing unjust interaction between trans girls and young women of color and gender nonconforming youth and police. Any police officer who is committed to serving and protecting the community shouldn't have a problem identifying themselves as such, and shouldn't have a problem with consent. Researchers at CUNY Graduate Center found that 2 in 5 young women in New York City report sexual harassment by police officers, and LGB youth are twice as likely to report negative sexual harassment by police officers.
Bianca Garcia is a trans woman. She emigrated from Mexico about 10 years ago. She's an organizer with the LGBT project at Make the Road New York.
Desde los 10 años que yo llevo viviendo acá, llevo más de 7 años viviendo como mujer transgénero.
Of the 10 years that I've lived here, 7 of those years have been as a transgender woman.
Y durante todo ese tiempo he estado enfrentando la violencia de la policía.
During all of that time, I have been facing police violence.
Porque me paran y me revisan por simplemente ser una mujer transgénero.
Because they stop me and they search me just for being a trans woman.
Esa es una de las razones principales por las cuales estamos aquí. No solamente yo como mujer transgénero, sino muchas comunidades que estamos el día de hoy acá.
And this is the main reason why I am here today, and not only as a trans woman, but also for all of our communities that are here today.
Necesitamos saber quién es la policía o el oficial que nos está parando, porque por durante muchos años nosotras como mujeres trans hemos estado enfrentando la violencia, la discriminación y abuso sexual de parte de la policía.
We need to know the name and identity of the police officers and officials that stop us, because for a long time, we as trans women have been facing so much discrimination and sexual abuse at the hands of the police.
Y esta es una de las cosas por la cual la comunidad tiene que estar más confiada en la policía ahora, porque los crímenes de odio aquí en New York han aumentado a un 36%.
And now more than ever, we need to be able to trust the police, because we are seeing an increase in hate crimes and hate violence.
Sabemos que la comunidad no se siente cómoda llamando a la policía, por eso esos crímenes no son reportados.
We know that our community does not feel comfortable calling the police, and it's for that reason that many of these crimes are never reported.
Por eso estamos aquí, porque queremos que la policía, nosotros queremos confiar en la policía.
And that is why we are here, because we want to have trust in the police.
Tina Longo is with Legal Aid, representing over 200,000 New Yorkers who fight their cases throughout the courts of New York City.
It might be shocking to you that many times when our public defenders are in courtrooms and ask a client what has happened, that client has no idea the name of the officer that stopped them on the street, put handcuffs in them, searched their bodies to put them in a car, dragged them through central booking, maybe 24 to 36 hours after they meet their lawyer, and for the first time, they may know the name because the lawyer was given the name first. That seems odd. That seems odd because that doesn't make any common sense. And then we're surprised that those people feel violated and angry. And when they go into their communities, they don't trust. They don't trust the people that we pay as taxpayers to protect them. And we ask ourselves why. This administration has done some really incredibly progressive things in terms of some of the issues. The speaker has commissioned a commission to close Rikers. She has pushed for bail reform. She has pushed for data transparency. So let's be fully transparent. Let people who are arrested and searched and dragged through central booking and handcuffed and fed minimal food while they're behind bars know who stopped them and asked before they're searched, so perhaps they can invoke their constitutional right to say no.
Despite the fact that a majority of New York City Council members are sponsors supporting the Right to Know Act, the legislation is still pending. It was revealed in July that an agreement between the speaker and former NYPD Commissioner Bill Bratton tried to avoid the legislation. But community groups and police reform advocates vow to keep up the pressure until the Right to Know Act becomes law. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. President Barack Obama has ordered a full-scale review of campaign season cyber attacks to be completed before he leaves office in January. White House spokesperson Eric Schultz.
We are committed to ensuring the integrity of our elections, and this report will dig into this pattern of malicious cyber activity timed to our elections, take stock of our defensive capabilities, and capture lessons learned to make sure that we brief members of Congress and stakeholders as appropriate. What the president asked for is a review to look at malicious cyber activity timed to our presidential election cycle. And so it will be broader than just looking at this past election.
Schultz says the investigation will look at the tactics, targets, key actors, and the U.S. government's response to recent email hacks, as well as incidents reported in past elections. Meanwhile, 10 members of the Electoral College released an open letter to the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, demanding an intelligence briefing on allegations the Russian government interfered in the U.S. election. Electoral College members are due to vote on December 19th. WBAI's Rebecca Miles has more.
Members of the Electoral College are just the latest group to call for more information about the allegations that Russia intervened in the U.S. elections, with lawmakers from both parties calling for a thorough investigation. President Obama ordered a review of Russia's alleged role, and Congress is calling for hearings. What we do know is these allegations stem from a Washington Post report that the Central Intelligence Agency said in a secret assessment in a private meeting with senators last week that Russia intervened in the 2016 election to help Donald Trump win the presidency. So, a secret assessment in a secret meeting with a clandestine organization. Got it. What we do know that so far this involves the WikiLeaks release of emails from the Democratic National Committee. We also know from the Washington Post that during the private meeting, the CIA cited a growing body of intelligence from multiple sources. We also learned that the presentation fell short of a formal U.S. assessment produced by all 17 U.S. intelligence agencies. We also know that a senior U.S. official said there were minor disagreements among intelligence officials about the agency's assessment, in part because some questions remained unanswered. Also, that the intelligence agencies did not have specific intelligence showing officials in the Kremlin directing the identified individuals to pass the democratic emails to WikiLeaks. Those actors were one step removed from the Russian government rather than government employees, according to the Washington Post. Julian Assange has already said the Russian government is not the source. So what we do know is this. There was a hack of documents by an individual, mostly emails, from the Democratic National Committee. Those emails were given to WikiLeaks, who published them. That's what we know. Most of the Podesta emails were on how the Democratic National Committee shaped Clinton's campaign, was worried about the rise of support for Bernie Sanders, and that the candidate was given questions before one of the debates. Trump told Time magazine he didn't believe the Russians interfered. He said the hacking could be Russia, it could be China, and it could be some guy in his home in New Jersey. Let's not lose sight of the CIA in the middle of all of this, who during Operation Mockingbird bought journalists, fed stories to media outlets, and even tapped the phones of journalists like Jack Anderson, who was noted for reporting on a CIA plot to assassinate Fidel Castro, the harassment of the Nixon administration on John Lennon, ex-Nazi officials in South America, and the savings and loans crisis and the Iran-Contra affair. Let's not also forget the CIA director, John Brennan, has headed the agency during a time of revelations that the US government conducted massive levels of global surveillance, that the CIA hacked the computers of the US Senate employees during the Senate Intelligence Committee report over CIA torture. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
House Speaker Paul Ryan says any investigation should not cast doubt on the clear and decisive outcome of the election. He chided those who would exploit the work of the U.S. intelligence community for partisan purposes. Hillary Clinton's campaign is backing the effort by members of the Electoral College to request an intelligence briefing on any foreign interference in the presidential election. Over the weekend, Trump questioned why what was known didn't come out before the election. Meanwhile, the state of Georgia is accusing the Homeland Security Department of apparently trying to hack its electoral system. Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp said in a letter this past week that a computer traced back to the agency in Washington tried unsuccessfully to penetrate the state office's firewall. This was 1 week after the presidential election. Kemp is seeking details, including who might have authorized the activity and whether other states might have been scanned without authorization. Georgia was one of two states that did not accept the federal department's help to secure its election-related systems. Kemp sits on the Department of Homeland Security's Election Infrastructure Cybersecurity Working Group. Speaking to activists across the city, one thing is certain since the election of Donald Trump. They are encouraging people to rally, to speak out, and to organize locally. Donald Lieberman, the NYCLU's executive director.
I think people need to be, speaking out about every single appointment that is proposed and every single issue that the proposed appointees represent. A departure from the core values and principles of our society. I think that the parade of leaked or possible appointees is a very clever way to keep attention on all Trump all the time. We have to keep our eyes on the prize, the values that we hold dear, the values that are at the core of our democracy, and make it clear that starting, the minute the election was over, that the American people are not going to sit by and watch anybody, any group,
you know, take away our liberties. So we have to be mobilized, we have to be united, and we have to be loud and strategic.
But the mainstream media seems to be focusing on Trump watching himself on television and on his tweets and not on the issues.
Yeah, well, I think that that's a real problem, and the mainstream media needs to be called to task for that. And we have to take advantage also of social media to get the people's voice out there.
Financial advisors say social media posts and tweets are opinions and shouldn't be used to make major financial decisions. Veronica Carter reports.
Financial experts are warning against knee-jerk reactions to President-elect Donald Trump's tweets. Since election night, when it was announced Trump had won, there have been some dramatic swings in the stock market. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management says people who invest in a company or an industry should do serious research before buying or selling off in reaction to something on social media. He says usually the financial world isn't affected by one person's opinion.
We don't see it as much in the financial industry. So this is kind of new for us, but then again, we're all learning how to live with a tweet president who is not afraid about getting out on social media and giving the world his opinion.
Nolte says 140-character bursts of opinion on Twitter are just that, one person's abbreviated views, and not enough information for making a big financial decision. Nolte adds some people shouldn't jump to too many conclusions about how the economy will react to a new administration. He says there will probably be some winners, likely banks and industrial companies, but there may be some losers too.
Utilities, consumer staples, to a certain extent, healthcare, certainly the bond market, because the expectation is with the economy doing reasonably well at this point, we're pretty close to full employment, and we're going to add a stimulus package to it. The fear is that inflation is really going to start to pick up.
Trump's tweeting has also started a debate in the media about whether his comments are actually news. He's tweeted recently about diplomatic relations with Cuba, cabinet picks, illegal voting, flag burning, and more. Trump says he doesn't plan to stop using social media, and that if the news media would cover him accurately, he wouldn't have as many reasons to tweet. For Public News Service, I'm Veronica Carter.
Meanwhile, Lockheed Martin's shares tumbled after Trump tweeted about reining in the costs of F-35 Joint Strike Fighters. It wiped out nearly $4 billion of the company's market value. It's the second time in a week Trump has blasted U.S. aircraft spending. Last week, he tweeted that costs to build new presidential planes by Boeing were out of control and ended the tweet with cancel order. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Bob Dylan, who was awarded the 2016 Nobel Peace Prize in Literature, didn't show up to accept his award from the Swedish Academy in Stockholm over the weekend, but he did send Patti Smith, who sang Dylan's A Hard Rain's A Gonna Fall at the Nobel Prize ceremony Saturday. Some audience members were brought to tears.
Where you been, my blue-eyed son? Where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled alongside of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled down 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. Been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. Been 10,000 miles on the mouth of a graveyard. It's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain's gonna fall. What did you see, my blue-eyed son? What did you see, my darling young one? Saw a newborn babe with wild wolves all around it. Saw the highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw the black branch with blood that kept dripping. I saw the babe that was just bleeding. I saw the babe that I'm sorry. Earth Saul 10th. I'm sorry. Could we start that section? I apologize. Sorry, I'm so nervous.
Please start again. We want to hear it.
So the newborn babe with wild wolves all around it. So the highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw the black branch with blood that kept dripping. So the room full of men whose hammers were bleeding. I saw the white ladder all covered with water. Saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart rings gonna fall. What did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? Heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. Heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. Heard one person laughing, heard many people laughing. Heard nobody listening. Heard one person starve, heard many people laughing. Heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. Heard the sound of a clown that cried in the alley. It's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart rings gonna fall. Who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a young man in half a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met a young man, he was wounded in love. I met another man, he was wounded in hatred. It's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart. It's a heart rings gonna fall. And what do you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what do you do now, my darling young one? I'm going back out for the rain starts to fall. I'm going down deep in the deepest black forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison have flooded their waters. We're home in the valley meets a damp, dirty prison. And and the executioner's face is always well hidden. Where hunger is ugly, where souls are forgotten, where black is the color, where none is the number. And I'll tell it and think it and speak it and breathe it and reflect from the mountain so all souls can see it. And I'll stand in the ocean until I start sinking, and I'll know my soul well if I start singing. It's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart rings a gun of fall.
Patti Smith singing Bob Dylan's A Hard Rain's A Gonna Fall in Stockholm over the weekend, standing in for Bob Dylan, who was awarded the 2016 Nobel Prize in Literature. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. And finally, here's Rebecca Nagley with a brief Trump Resistant Actions audio calendar.
Tuesday, December 13th, Crime Think, preparing for the Trump era, an anarchist viewpoint. Meet Tuesday, 7 to 9 p.m. at the base, 1302 Myrtle Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. Framing Trump's victory in a global context, the presenters will explore various approaches to self-organization and self-defense, drawing on the principles of mutual aid and direct action. Thursday, December 15th, Open Community Meeting, A Donald Trump Presidency, How Can We Resist? Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons, meet at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. Join with friends and neighbors for an open discussion on identifying the new challenges we face and determine how we can build a strong movement to defend the members of our communities. Saturday, December 17th, Not Straight Against Hate, rally and march up 5th Avenue to Trump Tower. Saturday, 5 to 10 p.m., meet at Washington Square Park. Join the march to defend and protect LGBTQ rights and freedoms. All allies and supporters welcome. Sunday, December 18th, the March for Immigrant New York, International Migrants Day March. Meet Sunday at 1 p.m. at Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza, East 47th Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue. March from the UN headquarters to Trump Tower. Call to action. Defend the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which provides 50,000 New Yorkers work permits and other essential resources. Protect immigrant communities from deportation, prevent the creation of a Muslim registry, and support refugee resettlement. To reference these actions and more, look to Left Forum's Movement Event Calendar. This is Rebecca Nagley, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, December 12, 2016. The news was produced with Rebecca Miles, Veronica Carter, Rebecca Nagley, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.